Okay. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to this session. I am Marta Celati. I am a research fellow here at the Renaissance Center. I'm from Italy. My research field is Renaissance literature and also mainly political literature, so also history of political thought. That is what we are going to see today. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start with a lecture, 1 hour lecture as usual. I think that usually this is the format, and then after the break we're going to have a discussion with questions as a kind of, and a kind of seminar. So today we're going to focus on Renaissance political thought, focusing especially on Italy, and in particular on the concept of resistance against political power and the conflict within the state. Mm-hmm. More specifically, we'll concentrate on conspiracies in the 15th century. And on how this crucial theme is treated also in literature. So we see that the influence of the classical legacy was crucial in the treatment of this topic of political plot in literature, especially in the 15th century. And this has been my research topic in the past few years. And today we'll see also how this topic of subversion in general and conflict within the state is connected with the evolution of the idea of tyranny in the Renaissance. So many things. So let's start. Two main points are remarkable if we consider conspiracies in the Italian Renaissance. The first point is that I hope that you can see the screen. In the second half of the 15th century, conspiracies were extremely frequent in Italian states. This was the main way through which resistance against political power was carried out in this period. And when we use the word conspiracy, we mean an attempt at overthrowing political power organized mainly by someone usually close to this power. So by a restricted group of people and not by the masses. So we have a conspiracy when a group of people plots against the ruler to take over power, and in many cases the plotters organize their plan in the hope that the common people will support their action and will rise up against the established ruler. But at least at the beginning, a conspiracy in this period is usually an action organized by a few people within the system of power. So it's significant that in the second half of the 15th century we don't have many popular revolts, but on the other hand, resistance to power is mainly carried out through conspiracies or attempts at conspiracies. And I say attempts because we are going to see that many plots were thwarted by the rulers, or they simply failed. There is another element that we have to stress, and is significant, in that in the second half of the 15th century we have the considerable diffusion of literary works that deal with the topic of political plot. So the issue of conspiracy is not considered just from a historical or political perspective, but also from a literary perspective. And it's often chosen as a topic of literary works. Thus, the conspiracies that took place in Italy in this period are narrated in many historical and literary works. This text belong to two main categories. They can be works devoted to the narration of the history of a specific city, for example, the histories of Florence or the histories of Milan. And these histories covered all the events which took place in these states in a particular period. But it's remarkable that this issue, the issue of conspiracy, is treated also in other works. And this second category consists of texts which are entirely devoted to the narrative of a political plot. So, in these works, contemporary conspiracy becomes the main topic. A significant number of works like this was produced in the Renaissance, and as we can maybe expect, the conspiracy is presented through a marked political perspective, a perspective that is effectively conveyed through different narrative strategies that we are going to see. Tonight. One of the main strategies is the, we can say, the transposition of the historical events of the conspiracy through the literary filter of the classical tradition. So the episodes are narrated, adopted the same categories of interpretation used in the classical world, that were used in the classical world to narrate the conspiracies which took place in the classical age. And we see some of these strategies and these categories in this session. So let's start. As I said, the topic of conspiracy attracted the attention of humanists and literati and intellectuals. But before focusing on these works, I would like to give you a general contextualization of this specific literature on conspiracies in this period. So from a historical point of view, it's important to say that these works on plots enjoyed a considerable diffusion, as I said, in the second half of the 15th century. And from this perspective, we have to underline some important elements. First, this is the period when the development of this literary theme is closely connected with the emergence of a centralized political ideology in most Italian states. Indeed, this age is characterized by a substantial concentration of political power in the hand of newly established leaders. So now most Italian states are the so-called signorie, so states ruled by a signore, a lord, or more in general, a prince or a princeps, as it is called in Latin, or a king. And these new rulers needed sources of legitimacy for their new power. And so they needed to establish new values on which they could base their authority. I wanted to show you also a map of the Italian states in the 15th century, just to give you an idea also of the geography of, since you know that Italy in this period was somehow fragmented in different states. So we have, and just to mention, I'm going to mention just the political centers on which we're going to focus somehow today. So, on the north, there is the Duchy of Milan in blue. Ruled by the Visconti, a noble family, and then by the Sforza, And for example, Francesco Sforza, who took over power around the 1450, was a military leader, a condottiero. So, a new kind of political leader. In the center we have Florence, which was an oligarchic republic, so a republic but ruled by mainly by aristocratic families. Then there are other signorie, other lordships in the center of Italy, Ferrara, I think that you already know this for Ariosto and Mantua, but in the center we have the Papal State, which actually wasn't just the city of Rome, but different territories in the center of Italy, here. And in the south, the Kingdom of Naples, where in this period we have a proper monarchy, the monarchy of the Aragonese family, a Spanish family who ruled the Kingdom of Naples in the second half of the 15th century. If you go back on text on plots, from a more cultural point of view, I wanted also to stress that the development of these works on conspiracies is also connected with the growing importance of history as an important element of political literature. So, what do I mean with this? In this period, many works were devoted to contemporary historical events, and we can recognize the substantial presence of history in literature. So history is seen as something that can teach us how to act in the contemporary world. And history has also a kind of exemplary meaning. Historical events, historical characters, historical figures are also often taken as exemplary figures. It's also interesting to consider that these texts on political plots were produced by different authors in different political centers, so they represent the political situation in different states. But despite these differences, these works are linked by similar political perspectives and ideologies in portraying the conspiracies. So the idea of political rebellion, which is now put into practice mainly through conspiracies, is seen through a similar angle in these works. And to make it simple, this perspective always supports the rulers who are the target of the conspiracy and condemns the rebellion and, in general, any attack against established government. We're going to focus on these historical events and the historical context in a minute, but first I would like to show you some images of some artworks, and they, I don't know if you can see this, maybe I'm in, I don't know, but maybe here is better. So these artworks significantly belong to another historical period, the modern age. Mainly, in particular, they were painted in the 19th century. The first image is a painting by the very famous artist of the Italian Romanticism, Francesco Hayez. And the subject of this painting is the conspiracy which took place in Milan in 1476, where the Duke Gian Galeazzo Maria Sforza was murdered. But I'll tell you more about this event later. But what is interesting to see is that the topic of conspiracy that enjoyed remarkable diffusion in Renaissance literature was recovered four centuries later, in 19th century art. So in this completely new historical context, this political theme was somehow resurrected and was reframed in artistic works, and it became a pivotal theme of Romantic visual culture. From a historical perspective, this was a very turbulent political phase. In particular, this is a period of revolutionary upheavals, especially in Italy. We have the three Italian independence wars and several uprisings. And the aim was to liberate Italy from the foreign domination of the Austro-Hungarian Empire and to unify the peninsula under one nation. So the topic of Renaissance conspiracies was re-elaborated from a completely different perspective and acquired completely different meanings. So in the 400, in the 15th century, political plots were seen from a pro-ruler perspective, and they were condemned as attacks against the unity of the state. On the other end, in the 19th century, these events became a vehicle to support anti-tyrannical heroes who were fighters for Italian liberty. And it's no coincidence that, for example, this painting, in this painting we have the plotters on the foreground. So the focus is on the plotters' standpoint, and they are represented in a very theatrical depiction. I would like to show you other paintings, just to show you that there is more than one, actually. Other paintings where this Renaissance theme was employed. This is, the quality of the image is not very good, but this is a painting which represents the Pazzi conspiracy. The conspiracy is narrated in the text that you probably read. And it's the conspiracy against the Medici brothers, which took place in Florence in 1478. This is one of the most famous events, one of the most famous conspiracies. So this was the subject of many paintings. This is another one. Again, these are the conspirators in this case, so the focus is again on the conspirators. This is another one. This represents the disinterring of the corpse of one of the conspirators, Jacopo Pazzi. And then we have also two lithographies by a famous Italian artist of the 20th century, Renato Guttuso. So this topic was represented also in the 20th century, not just in the 19th century. And these images were produced as illustrations for the first critical edition of Poliziano's Commentary on the Pazzi Conspiracy, the text that we're going to discuss in the seminar, maybe, which was published, this edition, in 1958. But it's interesting to see how this time the artistic language is completely different, and it can be linked with the movement of expressionism. And the images of the essential black and white bodies are very powerful, and this time they seem to symbolize the more general idea of violence and struggle of human life. So it's a bit, this theme is a bit transfigurated from a more general perspective. But after this digression on the modern age, let's go back to the early modern age, and let's have a general historical overview of Renaissance conspiracy. So, as I said, in the second half of the 15th century, many conspiracies took place. So this epoch has been defined by scholars as the age of conspiracies. So one of the first historical events of this age of conspiracies, is Stefano Borcari's conspiracy against Pope Nicholas V. So a conspiracy against the Pope in 1453. This conspiracy was organized by a Roman nobleman, Stefano Porcari, who was famous in Rome for his republican ideas. He was against the Pope's rule and he considered papal government as an oppressive and autocratic rule. His conspiracy was planned to take place on the 6th of January, 1453, during the religious celebration of the Epiphany. But the plan was discovered by the Pope before the conspirators could carry out the attack, and all plotters were captured and executed. The harsh reaction of Nicholas V against the plotters reveals the Pope's aim of suppress any threat to the papacy and reinforce his political power, a power that in this period was becoming similar to a princely power. So also the papal state in this period can be considered similar to a signoria. So that has been defined as a, the figure of the Pope also has been defined as a papal prince. So the Pope, with his revenge, wanted to also to dissuade any future attacker. But this plot, despite its failure, was a crucial event in the 15th century, and many humanists wrote works on this episode. For example, Leon Battista Alberti, a very famous humanist, wrote an epistle, historical epistle in Latin. All these works are in Latin. This work is entitled Porcaria Coniuratio. Another author, another very well-known humanist, Orazio Romano, wrote a poem in Latin entitled Porcaria on this event. So you can see also that we have different literary genres, not just historical narratives, but epistles, poems, even poems on this theme. As you can see, for example, both these titles, the titles of both these of both texts, are modeled on the name of the leader of the plot, Stefano Porcari. So we have Porcaria Coniuratio, or just Porcaria. And this choice is inspired by the most famous work on a conspiracy in the classical tradition. And it's Sallust, De Coniurazione Catiline. So Sallust is a Latin historian, and he narrated the attempt to overthrow the Roman government by the aristocrat Catiline. This conspiracy took place in 63 BC. So we can see already from these titles of 15th century works that Sallust, with his work on Catiline's conspiracy, is the main source of inspiration for Renaissance authors who wrote works on political plots. And in general, Sallust is adopted as the main model, a model not just from a thematic and stylistic perspective, but also for the political angle of the historical reconstruction. In particular, this text displays a prominent moral standpoint in recounting the events. And in particular, they portray the conspirators as unscrupulous and corrupted men, men driven by personal ambition and by the eagerness for uprisings and for overthrowing the state. This element appears especially in another text, that is Poliziano's commentary on the Pazzi conspiracy. So let's say something on the Pazzi conspiracy, which was probably the most famous political plot in the Renaissance. There is also a TV series now on the Medici. I don't know if you know them. The second season is focused on this conspiracy, with some historical inaccuracies actually, but it's fun. I enjoy it. So this is the conspiracy against the Medici brothers, Lorenzo and Giuliano, which took place on the 26th of April 1478 in the Cathedral of Florence. And in this attack, Giuliano de' Medici, the younger brother, was murdered, and Lorenzo the Magnificent managed to save himself. Thus, this plot failed since Lorenzo survived. This conspiracy became famous down in history with the name of the Florentine family who organized it, who planned it, the Pazzi. This was a powerful family in Florence, and they were enemies of the Medici. But the actual instigators of the plot, as you maybe know, were also others. In particular, the Pope, Sixtus IV, and the King of Naples, Ferdinando of Aragon. And they worked with the Pazzi in organizing the attack. So the Medici had both internal and external enemies. And the main external enemy actually was the Pope. We'll focus on this conspiracy maybe later when we'll discuss Poliziano's text. But I want to stress that the outcome of the plot was opposite to the conspirators' intentions. Not just because the conspiracy failed, but also because Lorenzo de Medici was able to put together a well-articulated system of propaganda immediately after the conspiracy to defend himself and the Medici. And thanks to this careful strategy, he was able to strengthen his authority in Florence and to concentrate political power in his hands even more. Thus, in the end, Lorenzo was able to win over his enemies, and he was able to win also thanks to the use of, we can say, cultural weapons, and not just through the military conflict. And therefore, the conspiracy didn't achieve its aim of defeating the Medici, but actually the result was the opposite. And this element is quite common if we think about Renaissance conspiracies, but Florence is an emblematic case. We have already seen that many attacks, also the conspiracy against the Pope was thwarted, and the plotters were discovered, and they were brutally punished and killed. Another famous literary work on a conspiracy is Giovanni Pontano's The Bello Napolitano, so on the Neapolitan War. Who is Giovanni Pontano? Giovanni Pontano is one of the most prominent Italian intellectuals of the 15th century. He lived in Naples. He was a very eclectic and influential figure, as many humanists in this period, a poet, a writer, a political thinker, a historian, and also the secretary of the King of Naples. In particular, Pontano's historiographical work narrates the so-called first conspiracy of the barons against the King of Naples, Ferdinando of Aragon. This is the rebellion of the noblemen against the king. It's a rebellion which started in 1459. And this rebellion resulted in a war between Ferdinando and the barons, and the war lasted until 1465, also because the barons were supported by the pretender to the Napolitan throne, who was John of Anjou from France. But in 1465, Ferdinando finally prevailed. What is more interesting is that Pontano's historical work is closely connected with the political treatises that Pontano wrote in the same period. These treatises are the Principe, on the prince, on the perfect prince, so a general, this general of the mirror for princes, and the De Obediencia, on obedience. So in his output, Pontano, thanks to the interplay of historiographical and theoretical works, produced a consistent theory of the ideal monarchical state. And significantly, this theory is designed on the basis of the actual and most crucial problems of the Kingdom of Naples. In particular, the issue of rebellion and, on the opposite, of obedience. And more specifically, in Pontano's works, so what comes to light is again a decisive condemnation of any rebellion. And this is a recurring element in all texts on conspiracies. So all these works condemn the uprisings and more generally any attempt at rebellion against the established government. We don't have time to focus on all Renaissance conspiracies, but there is another important event that I have to mention, and it's the conspiracy, we have already seen this image, the conspiracy that took place in Milan only 2 years before the Pazzi conspiracy in 1476. And this is the attack against the Duke of Milan, Galeazzo Maria Sforza. And in this case, he was fatally stabbed on the 26th of December 1476, as I said, in front of the Church of Santo Stefano in Milan. So this attack is quite similar to the Pazzi conspiracy, since it also took place nearby a church. Actually, the Pazzi conspiracy was carried out inside the church. But the murder of the king, of the Duke of Milan, is a rare example of a successful conspiracy in the Renaissance, since the target, the ruler, was killed. But the plotters eventually were not able to achieve their aims and were executed also in this case, as in the other conspiracies. The leader of the plot was a nobleman again, Giovanni Andrea Lampugnani, a Milanese nobleman, and he involved in his plan also other supporters who belonged to the aristocracy. But this plot is particularly significant from a cultural point of view, since it's representative of the diffusion of a specific political viewpoint on conspiracies in the 15th century. Indeed, if we analyze the contemporary sources on this plot, mainly the histories of Milan, we see a radical difference between the actual aims of the plotters and the reconstruction of the events provided by these sources. So, let's start from the conspirators' point of view. The conspirators against Galeazzo hoped to gain legitimacy for their plot, presenting themselves as followers of the anti-tyrannical tradition. And in their view, the Duke of Milan was seen as a tyrant, as a despot. In these years, the anti-tyrannical ideology was presented also in this case as rooted in the classical culture. So the conspirators celebrated Roman values and the ancient anti-tyrannical thought. In particular, the plotters, the Milanese plotters, associated the image of the Duke of Milan with the negative figure of Tarquinius Superbus. Who is Tarquinius the Superb? He's considered the most violent king of Rome, the last king of Rome, who was banished when the Republic of Rome was founded. Besides, these plotters also celebrated the most famous conspirators of the classical tradition, in particular Brutus and Cassius. And Brutus and Cassius are the assassins of Caesar, who was killed in a conspiracy and was considered the first ruler who changed the Roman government from a republic into the empire, so a monarchical rule. We have the kings, the republic, and then the empire again. These figures were seen as positive models by the Milanese plotters, as fighters for liberty, as supporters of republican values. The plotters claimed to follow these classical examples in their actions. But what is remarkable is that the interpretation of this event that prevailed after the plot was totally opposite to the conspirators' view. So they tried to justify their actions with reference to the anti-tyrannical ideology, but the standpoint that generally prevailed was focused on celebrating the principles of political unity in the state rather than liberty. And of course, this viewpoint was linked with a more centralized political view. And this is the case in general of all conspiracies in the 15th century. So these events were not seen as driven by the disapproval of despotic regimes, but on the contrary, they were described as caused by selfish and immoral men who aimed at obtaining power and put in danger the unity of the state. So the plotter's perspective was not supported and in the end was suppressed and defeated. And the fundamental contribution to this general condemnation of these actions was made by the text, this text on conspiracies. So it's interesting that from this perspective we have also a different view of tyranny and tyrannicide. So the tyrannicide is the murder of a tyrant. And just to say something on this very briefly. And we have a different view, especially in comparison with the previous tradition, also the medieval tradition. So traditionally the tyrant is seen as the ruler who had no legitimacy to govern, or the ruler who governs as a despot, so in an autocratic way. But now in these works we find a slightly different perspective. So only the prince is seen as a legitimate ruler, actually even when he rules unfairly, and is never associated with a tyrant. Since the most important political principle now becomes, as I said, the unity of the state, and therefore in many cases the tyrant is now recognized in the plotter himself. So the tyrant now is the rebel who acts against the unity of the state and who tries to take over power illegitimately as a tyrant. And therefore the plotter, the rebel, deserves to be punished and is executed as a tyrant. As I said, the diffusion of this interpretation of plots and rebellions in the second half of the 15th century is closely associated with the emergence of a centralized political ideology in the Italian states. In particular, this political thought reflects the concentration of political power in the hands, as I said, of newly established leaders. And so most of the works on plots in this period are aimed at supporting the current rulers threatened by a conspiracy. But this political narrative is not totally new, and it retains some elements of the interpretation of the idea of conspiracy which emerged already in the classical tradition. How does the idea of conspiracy evolve so in classical culture? So originally the main meaning of the Latin word conspiratio, or conspiratio with the classical pronunciation, so conspiracy, the original meaning is an act of taking an oath, especially among soldiers to show loyalty. But at some point there was a shift in the significance of this word, and it acquired the meaning it has today. This happened in particular starting from Cicero onwards, in particular from Cicero's denunciation of Catiline's conspiracy. You know, Cicero the philosopher and the rhetorician, he wrote also some very famous orations against Catiline, which were delivered in the Senate. So from this historical event, the word conspiracy is associated with the negative meaning of sedition and insubordination. So in this semantic evolution, we have a shift to the negative significance of political crime. So subversion, this perspective is enhanced even more in the humanist age. Conspiracy and subversion are associated with the idea of political crime. But let's move on to see some of the recurring elements which link these Renaissance texts on conspiracies. So we're going to see briefly some narrative strategies employed to convey effectively this political ideology. It's significant that some of these literary patterns are drawn from the most important classical work on a conspiracy, Sallust's De Coniurazione Catiline. As we said, the unspoken aim of these literary works is to maintain the political unity of the state and to support the established governments. And in the Renaissance, this is specific of the Renaissance, the aim is also to legitimize the new political powers which emerged in this period and were put into danger by the plotters. One of the main recurring features in this text is the representation of the conspiracy as an exceptional historical event. So, almost all texts immediately at the very beginning, or very often at the very beginning, present the plot as an unprecedented attack on the state, against the state, and against the common good. In doing this, all authors follow the model of Sallust, who in his work gave the very same connotation to Catiline's plot. So Sallust presented Catiline's plot as a crime memorable crime in the centuries. And this passage actually is quoted by Poliziano, if you have read the text, at the very beginning of his work. He started saying that he has decided to narrate this historical event because it was a shocking and memorable crime. So in general, through this correlation with Sallust, all humanists underscore the dangerous nature of the political attack, and they also equate it to a criminal action. Moreover, the emphasis put on the brutality of the conspiracy also works as a strategy of containment of possible future seditions. Another pivotal element in all texts is the portrait of the conspirators, and in particular, as we in Poliziano's commentary, for example, the description of the plotters as a fundamental position in the text, since the whole first half of the work is devoted to the description of the plotters, as we are going to see maybe. In general, in works on plots in the 15th century, the portrayal of the conspirators can be more detailed or just sketched, but is a central pillar in the representation of the conspiracy as a criminal action. In particular, the plotters are depicted as guilty of some specific vices. They have some negative features, recurring negative features: moral corruption, avarice, envy, duplicity, inconstancy, and most of all, the inclination to subversive political change. They are described often also as gamblers, so with more anecdotal traits. And once again, the literary characterization of these figures is mainly inspired by the description of Catiline. All these elements build the conspirator's profile, the profile of the conspirators, and the most pivotal trait ascribed to the conspirator is the eagerness for the so-called res novae. So this is the Latin term used in this work. So what does it mean? This Latin expression was used by Sallust, and literally means new things, but actually the meaning is new political systems established through a revolution. So the cupiditas, eagerness, cupiditas rerum novarum, the eagerness for new political systems established through a revolution. And so this expression conveys the idea of overthrowing governments. And so, because any rebellion is seen as putting an end to the civic concord in the state, the plotters are not simply guilty of having radical political views that they could be allowed to have, maybe. But their political action is associated with a crime. And from this perspective, the contemporary 15th century conspirators appear as a new Catiline, as a figure of a new Catiline, and as an illegitimate pretender to power. Finally, we have to say that in this literary text, two elements play a key role. two somehow symmetrical elements. On the one hand, we have the image of the revenge carried out against the plotters, a revenge that is supported by all citizens, usually is represented as supported by all citizens. And so, on the other hand, we have the display of the common people's love for their ruler. This representation obviously conveys the idea of an unbreakable link between the ruler, the state, and the people. So if the ruler is safe, also the state and the citizens are safe. And in this view, also the representation of the punishment inflicted on the plotters plays a pivotal function in the text, since it becomes the representation of the revenge of the whole civic community against its enemies. While actually often these conspiracies were just, the target of these conspiracies was just the ruler. But let's move on to Poliziano and his commentary on the Pazzi conspiracy, where we can find many of these elements typical of the text of On Plot, if you had the chance to read it. But before focusing on the text and his author, I would like to give you a very brief overview on the historical context in Florence. So Florence, as I said, was a republic, but the government was not democratic as today. So it was an oligarchic republic ruled by the most powerful families of the city. However, after in the first decades of the 15th century, around 1430, there was a kind of centralization of power in the hands of one single family, the Medici. As you probably know, the Medici were bankers, so they were just private citizens. But around 1430, the Medici emerged as the most powerful Florentine family, and they succeeded in centralizing power in their hands. This process started with Cosimo de' Medici, Lorenzo's grandfather, and then it reached a kind of peak with Lorenzo the Magnificent himself in the second half of the century. But what is important to keep in mind is that formally, from a formal point of view, Florence always remained a republic in terms of institutions in the 15th century. So the Florentine government officially was still a republic also under the Medici. But we can say that it became a kind of lordship disguised as a republic. And the Medici succeeded in achieving this result by different strategies, and in particular they created an all-embracing system of cultural politics aimed at consolidating their power. And in this political operation, also artists, humanists, intellectuals play a fundamental role. And they became more and more engaged in elaborating a cultural system in support of this political project. I would like to say something more about Poliziano. Poliziano's biography very quickly and his relationship with the Medici to better understand why he wrote this work. We have an image of Poliziano with Lorenzo's son. Poliziano was born in Montepulciano, a little village in Tuscany, in 1454. When his father died, he was only 10 years old, so he was sent to Florence to live with a cousin. In Florence, Poliziano started his brilliant literary career, and he got himself noticed very soon by Lorenzo de' Medici for his talent and literary genius. So Lorenzo was so impressed that he decided to take Poliziano into his household, assigning him the role of tutor of his children and appointing him as his personal secretary. As Lorenzo's secretary, Poliziano became a close collaborator of the ruler of Florence, and most importantly, he played a prominent role in the creation and strengthening of the Medici's cultural politics. And in this period, he became also what we may call a poet laureate, the poet officially appointed by the Medici to compose poems to commemorate official events. As his major poem and very famous masterpiece, Le Stanze per la Giostra di Giuliano de' Medici. But let's move on to see Poliziano's role in the difficult situation of the conspiracy. We have seen that these conspiracies were plotted by the Pazzi family, were enemies of the Medici, but the instigators were also Sixtus the Fourth and the King of Naples. We have seen that the conspiracy took place in the church of Santa Maria del Fiore, the Cathedral of Florence, the Duomo. And here Giuliano was killed, was deadly stabbed, while Lorenzo managed to save himself. It's interesting to note that when the Medici were attacked in the church, Poliziano was there, so he was present in the church. So he was a witness of the attack, and he immediately wrote a historical account of the events to support the Medici standpoint. We don't know if Lorenzo directly asked him to write this text, but it's likely that he did it. And this is a very important work because it's also the first historical account of the conspiracy, narrated by a witness. But this work is, of course, also a political text. So it's not coincidence that Poliziano describes the conspirators as evil and immoral men, as you have probably seen. This literary account, Poliziano's literary account, was the cornerstone of the pro-Medici propaganda after the plot. When other works, both literary works and artistic works, were produced as part of Lorenzo's cultural politics in this difficult situation. And before starting our seminar, I would like to say just something more on the commentarium. This is the first page of the first printed edition of Poliziano's work, printed immediately after the conspiracy, already in the summer, or probably in the summer of 1478, by a Florentine typographer. And it's interesting that this is the first time that the new invention of the printing press, the art of printing, plays a fundamental role also in the fight between Lorenzo and the Pope. So in this, and in general in Lorenzo's propaganda. But Poliziano's work, this text, as all Poliziano's work, is also an extremely refined, sophisticated literary work. It was used as a source also by following historians, for example, by Machiavelli himself. But as we can imagine, the conspiracy is narrated by Poliziano from a political angle, so in particular the perspective of the historical reconstruction is totally focused on Florence, leaving out the wider political dimension of the episode. And this approach achieves the goal of isolating the event from the Italian context, and at the same time it underlines the isolation of the conspirators from the Florentine people. This is a key point in the text. because the Florentine people are represented as loyal to the ruler. The last thing I want to say before the seminar, and then maybe we can start from here. As I said, after the conspiracy, Lorenzo was able to consolidate still more his political position in Florence. And he could achieve this result also thanks to this system of propaganda he built. And Poliziano's work was a central pillar of this system of propaganda. And this propaganda presented the image of Lorenzo as a ruler loved by his people, a ruler depicted as the guardian of the city. So his safety corresponds to the safety of the whole state. And we can find also an emblematic representation of Lorenzo as the savior of Florence in a famous artistic work. And this is the last thing I'm going to show you before the seminar. So we can start from here. This is the medal, and it's one of the exemplars still extant today. I think that it's in the British Museum. This is the medal that Lorenzo commissioned after the conspiracy from the artist Bertoldo Di Giovanni. And as you can see, in the medal we have the representation of the conspiracy. And on one side, there is the image of Lorenzo, of Giuliano, which is combined with the motto in Latin, Luctus Publicus, public grief. On the other side, on the reverse, we have Lorenzo's image, which is combined with the emblematic words, Salus Publica, public safety. So, here the images of the Medici are directly associated with the idea of the state, of the public and civic community, as the adjective public, publicus, emphasizes. And in particular, Lorenzo is defined as public safety. So, his safety after the plot corresponds to the safety of the whole state. But this artwork also shows us how extensive and all-embracing was the Medici propaganda in this period. We can see later, we can start our seminar from here, and we can see if we can find in the text some elements that are similar to this representation. And of course, you can ask me all the questions you want. I wanted just to finish this, and we can have our break, and then we come back. Thank you.